I'm 90 years old. I was born in St. Louis. I grew up in the little town of Wood River, Illinois, which is in metropolitan St. Louis. I stayed there, went to school, grade school, high school, graduated from high school in June of 1938, and I joined the Navy in October of 1938.
And obviously, you got stationed at Pearl Harbor, is that right?
Well, eventually, I went through a group of schools. I became a hospital corpsman, and I went through, well, the basic hospital corps school. I went through X-ray technician school, and in 1941, I was assigned to the USS Solace, which was a Navy hospital ship. Brand new, and we went in commission in August of 1941. After a slight shakedown cruise, we headed for a place that I had never heard of before. Went through the Panama Canal, pulled into Long Beach, California, and then on to Pearl Harbor. We arrived in Pearl mid-October of 1941, and it was a very lovely place to be, the palm trees swaying, the breezes blowing, beautiful blue water, and nice and warm, and having just left Philadelphia in a winter before that, it was a nice respite. We stayed, the thing that happened very shortly after we got there was the Japanese bombing Pearl Harbor. And as I say, when the ship that I was on, we had a bunch of sort of green sailors that had never been off the East Coast, and we really didn't understand where Pearl Harbor was until we got there. And then on this 7th of December, we found out really what it was like, and the dream was shattered, you know, all the nice things that were before no longer existed. We lost a bunch of men, lots of ships, and it was a rather hectic time. I was not aboard ship at the time of the bombing. I was with four other guys off the ship. We went sightseeing because we'd been there since October and hadn't seen too much of anything but downtown Honolulu and Waikiki Beach, which isn't a real thing of the area. You know, there are better things to see, et cetera. And we were standing on the Pali, which is an overpass from one side of the island to the other. And our cab driver, who incidentally was Japanese, was explaining to us all the lore of King Kamehameha's reign, where he used to throw his enemies, pardon me, over the side of the cliff. And if they walked away, they were free. Well, hardly any of them walked away. They were all carried away. But in the meantime, we were looking out over the Naval Air Station in Kaneohe and saw anti-aircraft bursts in the air. And then we would see an airplane fall down and, you know, well, who are these nuts that are practicing on Sunday? And they're shooting down drones. Well, we found out that that wasn't what was going on at all. Some gentleman was driving through, and he stopped. We were not in uniform at the time, and he asked if we were in the service, and we answered yes. And he said, well, you're supposed to go back to your ships or stations or wherever you are because the Japanese just bombed Pearl Harbor. Well, we looked at him like he was a nut. I turned the radio on in the cab, and sure enough, they had bombed, the first wave had done its damage. So we jumped in the cab, got back in uniform, got down to the Navy landing in Pearl, and the Marine sentry there, seeing that we were all corpsmen, said we should get in that little small boat and go out there where we could do some good, where the guys were flailing around in the water and being blown off the ship. And about the time we left the dock, the second wave came over, and that was interesting. Looked up as they passed overhead, and I thought, well, if I was just a couple of inches taller, I could reach up and grab one of those mothers, but really couldn't. And then we ended up on Ford Island, actually, the Naval Air Station, and spent the next 2 days there. We couldn't get back to the ship. There was no transportation or anything else. So we set up a first aid station in one of the hangars and took care of some of the guys when they would come ashore that had been, most of it was all burns. There were a few of wounds from fire, but most of the stuff was, the water was all aflame from the spilled oil. And these guys were swimming through this stuff, so it was just a matter of cleaning them up more than anything. Some patchwork, but, they had a big dispensary there, so most of them were taken there. The night of the 7th, I think, was the most interesting and most trying time as far as frightening. During the attack, we were just too darn busy to be afraid, really. We were afraid, but not that much. But the night of the 7th, in total darkness, six airplanes came in from the USS Enterprise, and they didn't tell anybody they were coming, and they came in very rapidly. And five out of the six were shot down. I mean, the place lighted up like dawn. It's a wonder everybody didn't get killed with all the free fire that was going on. But anyhow, the one guy, he got in, and he was alive and, well, lived through the thing. But the other five were all shot down. After that, got back to the ship on Tuesday, and the routine set back in. The ship was a 400-bed hospital ship, and it was totally equipped with all the things of, at that time, a modern-day hospital, all the modalities that were there. We had operating rooms, X-ray, which I was part of, and all the rest of the emergency rooms that or incumbent on a hospital. And we were operating under the Geneva Convention, where we travel alone. It was painted white with a large red cross directly amidships, so a beautiful target. Until Okinawa, the hospital ships were not touched. And I've seen pictures of that were taken in submarines where we were in the sight of these things, but they at no time for, well, I left it in November of 43 and went to another hospital ship. And in the 2 years and a couple of months that I was on there, we didn't even get a bit of our paint scratched from enemy fire or anything. And while I was on there, we took patients from the Battle of Midway, the Coral Sea Battle. We were in the Solomon's operation and evacuated 22 shiploads off of Guadalcanal. So we were rather busy from time to time.
What was it like seeing a Japanese plane fly overhead, drop bombs on your base, seeing fellow servicemen, you know, injured or dead or, you know, otherwise under such, you know, duress?
Well, as I say, it was more shock than anything else. At the time it was happening, there was so much going on that, fear really didn't enter into the thing. But how did this happen? How could it happen? And just getting things done, there was enough to do that there wasn't that much to think about. These guys were in and out. I mean, the waves didn't last that long, but they did a horrible amount of damage, as you know, from all the pictures you've seen of it and the number of people that were killed at the time. And as you know, the Arizona is still a shrine, and, well, it should be. Like I say, the worst part was the night of the 7th, as far as I was concerned. If fear was going to set, I was more aware of what was going on that night than I was during the day, because, as I say, we were so busy trying to help out where we could that didn't really have time to think about it.
Did any of the flyers from the Enterprise survive being shot down? Were they all killed? Did any of them bail out? Do we know?
One guy. Only one man made it safely, and he's the one that landed on the air station. The rest of them are all shot down, yeah. You don't hear too much about that, though.
What was the mood of the people that lived on Oahu after that attack that day?
Well, before the attack, it was just a very easygoing place. You went on Liberty and you had a good time, and you could go swimming at Waikiki. Food was very reasonable. It had to be reasonable, because at that time, I think I was a second-class petty officer, and I was making about $80 a month. So, you know, you don't go far. Even in those days, everybody says, oh, but it was worth more then. Yeah, but a buck is still a buck, and if you don't have it, you don't, you know, you can't use it. But anyhow, after the 7th, martial law was declared, and for the longest time, there was no liberty, no shore liberty. We were stuck aboard ship and just doing our thing aboard ship and getting cleaned up and whatever was necessary as far as resupplying everything. We did that. And then finally, after the first of the year, they finally let us start going ashore again. And it was something like from noon to 6 or 7 o'clock. You had to be back to the ship before dark. There was no overnights whatsoever in Hawaii. And we left there mid-March, and the same thing still applied at that time. And the first liberty made after we did get ashore, and you walk out on Waikiki Beach and see it loaded with barbed wire for no more pristine beach to swim on. So you work your way in between the barbed wire and go out and lay down and get some rays and that sort of thing. But the one other thing that we did for, until the day we left, every morning we would send, for want of a better word, a patrol out to look for bodies. And we were finding bodies until we left there. And like I say, we left in mid-March. But we would send a boat out every day just to see if there were anybody. You know, the guys would start floating up to the top and that sort of thing. So we were picking bodies up yet until mid-March when we left Pearl. But the people... They didn't change. Everybody was much more tense. The folks out in town, but still, there was no animosity toward at least the American sailors. There was as you know, there's a large Japanese population out there, but they didn't seem to, from what I could tell, and you being a sailor, you don't see much of what's going on in town, but everything was taken care of rather summarily, and what happened to them, I think some of them were sent back to the States into the concentration camps and that sort of thing. But there was no untoward thing happening at that time in Honolulu. People seemed to be getting along together.
Do you think that there was any espionage work going on the Hawaiian Islands before December 7th?
I have no idea. As I say, I was a corpsman. We were non-combatants. Our ship didn't even get involved in... I'm sure the captain of the ship was privy to a lot of this stuff, but it never got down to the crew. And what you read and what I've read, I have quite a library on what happened out there. It's still up in the air. You know, who's going to take the blame for it and who dropped the ball? The admiral and the general were finally exonerated from what the bad stuff that happened to them. They weren't responsible. But, you know, who did it? That's political, and you really can't get involved in it. I'm just happy that I'm one of the very fortunate ones that came back from it.
This may be a dumb question. Were you scared during the attack?
Oh, that's like I said. When we were in the water, when the second wave came over, I really wasn't afraid. I was surprised and shock or whatever you want to call it. But like I said, I didn't have any fear until that night when the sky lighted up again, when they were shooting our planes out of the sky. Because, hell, I didn't know what was going to happen. But, thinking back on it, I wasn't afraid. Just, and it's, like I say, it was more surprise and shock than anything, that how in the hell could it happen? And why did it happen? Well, we found out why, but, that's about the cat hop. From there, you know, I rode the rest of the war out on another hospital ship. I was at sea or in the Pacific from October of 41 till May of 46.
How long were you in the Navy after the war ended?
I did 20. I retired from the Navy in 1958. Went in 1938, got out in 1958. I got a good education. I went to several schools while I was in. They were all service schools, but they allowed me to get a hell of a good job when I got out. And I saw a lot of things I would never have seen before. I don't know how it is in today's Navy, you know, one nice thing about it, if you just roll with it and take what's there, it's a good life. I enjoyed it. I was stationed in some terrible places, New York, Philadelphia, the Bay Area, San Diego, you know, just terrible. Would I have seen those things if I'd have stayed in Wood River? No. My only regret is I didn't take my father's advice and go to college. However, I made up for it in the Navy.
Are you still in touch with any one of your comrades from that day?
Yeah, we have a ship reunion every year. As a matter of fact, this year we were in Vancouver, Washington, and totally there were 40 at the banquet. Of the 40, there were 9 sailors left. that are at least that made it. There are more still alive, but there were five of us from the original crew and four other guys that had come aboard at later intervals. So we've been doing this now since 1990. We move it around. It was in Washington this year. It's going to be in San Antonio next year. We've been in Boston, San Francisco, Phoenix, Albuquerque, St. Louis, Baltimore, Orlando, Tennessee, somewhere, Nashville. But we get together and let's see, the oldest guy in the group this year was 94, and all the rest of us are right in 90, and then we had one young guy there, he was only 88, you know.
He's the kid, huh?
He's the kid.
How many of you are left, number-wise, or do you know?
You mean Pearl Harbor survivors?
From your particular...
I really don't know. I've got a roster of the guys off the Solis in there, but I've never counted. I'm sure there's less than 100 now, though. Way less, I'd say.
Did you lose anybody that day that you knew personally?
There was a couple of guys I knew on the Arizona that I had been stationed with in Philadelphia. They went out there before I got on the Solis. But then when the Solis got in out there, and we were, well, my ship was about 100 yards away from the Arizona when the attack started. But, yeah, and both of those guys were corpsmen, and they are still in the Arizona. They didn't get out. There were several other guys who were on different ships. A couple of guys I went to high school with, as a matter of fact, but they got out all right.
There's been several movies or miniseries made about what happened that day. Have you seen any of them? And when these movies or TV shows or miniseries come out about what happened that day, do you think that the people who put those out get the point or get the gist of the significance of what happened that day? Or
the one that, as far as I'm concerned, that has any modicum of truth in it, it was Tora, Tora, Tora. And that was a good movie, and it was it was fairly factual, really. This last thing that came out called Pearl Harbor, that was just about two aviators who were chasing a Navy nurse. So that was the extent of that one. I mean, it had nothing to do, and they all, they take poetic license on this stuff, and they had more airplanes flying around there and people getting shot down. It didn't happen that way. It was mayhem. There's no doubt about that. But another thing in the favor of the well-trained Navy, American Navy, is they had stuff moving very, very rapidly, even during the first foray. They had shots going back at the Japanese at that time. So, and the thing you have to realize that back in those days, Friday was materiel inspection, Saturday was personnel inspection. And materiel inspection, everything got locked up below decks. I mean, everything was put away, out of sight, out of mind. So when the attack started, they had to undo everything that had been done and get all the ammunition up where they could fire. And just the fact that they got it done as rapidly as they did, it's a hell of a job. And they were firing at these people before the first wave was ever over.
Last question I have. At the time, did you or any of the other average servicemen think that we were going to be at war with Japan or Germany eventually? Or was it really a surprise when it happened?
Well, it's a surprise the way it happened, but aware, I guess, maybe not a good word, but we knew that something was going on because we had been alerted, and this is one of the reasons why the five of us hired that cab on Sunday. Scuttlebutt, the word was out that we were going to move out of there in the near future. You know, things were bubbling in the Far East. Japan was already on a march out there. But we didn't know where we might be going, why we might be going. But the five of us guys decided, well, if we're going to get out of here, we better, you know, go on a visit now and see the rest of what's on the island. And that's why we were there on that Sunday, because we just picked a day, not knowing that something like this was going to happen. But the feeling is we knew or felt, we didn't know, that things were bubbling up in Europe. Europe at that time, you know, was happening, and that was a long way away from Honolulu. But still, the exercises, what we did, you know, we went out and practiced this and practiced that, and it picked up. Where instead of doing it once a month, we'd do it like once a week, where you'd do this or you'd do that, or would simulate whatever could be, you know, what might happen. So, yeah, we were aware that something was probably in the wind, but didn't know when or how. I guess that's about it. I think that would answer your question.
I thought of one more question, just one. Excellent. The five of you who went on that cab ride, are any of them still around, or have some of them passed on?
No, they're all gone. I'm the only one left. We were, you know, again, we were all about the same age, but they've been gone quite a while. One was on a submarine. He left the ship, went aboard a submarine, and it got sunk off of Australia somewhere, and he didn't make it out of there. And the other three died natural deaths later on, and here am I still in Jefferson City and enjoying every moment of it. But anyhow, that's about the cat hop. And, you know, after that, my own personal experience, I would went to this other hospital ship, and we were at Iwo, we were at Saipan, Guam, Okinawa, Palau, all those nice places. I saw the flag waving at Iwo Jima. Oh, yeah. When we made, we were at Iwo D-Day plus 10 hours when we pulled in there. And I was at this time, the second hospital ship I was on was a 700 bed. And we loaded that thing in, I forget how many hours, and took the patients down to Guam. They had opened up a little mobile hospital in Guam. So we took the patients there. And then when we came back, that's when I saw the flag waving. You know, here's that flag up on Mount Suribachi. And if a flag goes up, that means it's secure. Well, Iwo was not secure at that time. We took two more boatloads off of there, and we were one of five hospital ships at Iwo at the time. And, you know, so it was, you know, and we took a whole bunch of guys off Okinawa, one load off of Palau, two loads off of Saipan, one load off of Guam. But, yeah, we were busy. I'm stressed. Yeah. Oh, God, my stress syndrome. But, you know, like one thing this is, now we're getting philosophical, but one thing I learned in all this nonsense was the value of life and how dear it was, because we would get these guys, and I mean they were in bad shape, and all these young guys, and just watching them fight for their lives to stay alive, it made you think how dear that life really was. And it changed my attitude on a lot of things as far as living, that don't waste it. If you got a choice, just don't waste it, because it is much too dear to mess with. If you want to practice chemistry, do it in a lab in school or something like that, but don't use the body to do. There we go. That's enough.
All right. Listen, thank you very much for your time.